life of 95 years, my Uncle Silas found time to try most things. And there was a time when he became a grave digger. The churchyard at Saulbrook stands a long way outside the village, on a little mound of bare land above the river valley. And there, dressed in a blue shirt and mulatto brown corduroys, and a belt that resembled more than anything a length of machine shafting, my Uncle Silas used to dig, perhaps, a grave a month. He would work all day there at the blue-brown clay without seeing a soul, with no one for company except crows, the peewits crying over the valley, or the robin picking the worms out of the thrown-up earth. Squat, misshapen, wickedly ugly, he looked something like a gargoyle that had dropped off the roof of the little church. Something like a brown dwarf who had lived too long after his time and might go on living and digging the graves of others forever. He was digging a grave there once on the south side of the churchyard on a sweet, sultry day in May. The grass, already long and deep, with strong golden cowslips rising everywhere among the mounds and the gravestones. The bluebells hanging like dark smoke under the creamy waterfalls of hawthorn bloom. By noon, he was fairly well down with the grave, and had fixed his boards to the sides. The spring had been very dry and cold, but now, in the shelter of the grave, in the strong sun, it seemed like midsummer. It was so good that Silas sat in the bottom of the grave and had his dinner, eating his bread and mutton off the thumb, and washing it down with the cold tea he always carried in a beer bottle. After eating, he began to feel drowsy, and finally he went to sleep there, at the bottom of the grave, with his wet, ugly mouth drooping open, and the beer bottle in one hand and resting on his knee. He had been asleep for a quarter of an hour or 20 minutes, when he woke up and saw someone standing at the top of the grave, looking down at him. At first, he thought it was a woman. Then he saw his mistake. It was a female. He was too stupefied and surprised to say anything, and the female stood, looking down at him, very angry at something, poking holes in the grass with a large umbrella. She was very pale, updrawn and skinny, with a face, as Silas described it, like a turnip lantern with the candle out. She seemed to have size 9 boots on. From under her thick black skirt, Silas caught a glimpse of an amazing knickerbocker leg, baggy, brown in colour, and about the size of an airship. He had not time to take another look before she was at him. She waved her umbrella and cawed at him like a crow, attacking him for indolence and irreverence, blasphemy and ignorance. She wagged her head and stamped one of her feet, and every time she did so, the amazing brown bloomer seemed to slip a little further down her leg, until Silas felt it would slip off altogether. Finally, she demanded, scraggy neck craning down at him, what did he mean by boozing down there, on holy ground, in a place that should be sacred for the dead? Now, at the best of times, it was difficult for my Uncle Silas, with ripe red lips, one eye bloodshot and bleary, and a nose like a crusty strawberry, not to look like a drunken sailor. But there was only one thing that he drank when he was working, and that was cold tea. It was true that it was always cold tea with whiskey in it, but the basis remained, more or less, cold tea. Silas let the female lecture him for almost 5 minutes, and then he raised his Panama hat and said, "Good afternoon, madam, and the cowslips out nice."
"Not content with desecrating holy ground," she said, "you're intoxicated, too."
"No, madam," he said, "I wish I were."
"Beer," she said. "Couldn't you leave the beer alone in here, of all places?"
Silas held up the beer bottle. "Madam," he said, "what's in here wouldn't harm a fly. It wouldn't harm you."
"It is responsible for the ruin of thousands of homes all over England."
"Cold tea?"
Giving a little sort of snort, she stamped her foot, and the bloomer leg jerked down a little lower.
"Cold tea?"
"Yes, madam, cold tea."
Silas unscrewed the bottle and held it up to her.
"Go on, madam, try it. Try it if you don't believe me."
"Thank you, not out of that bottle."
"Well, all right, I'm got a cup," Silas said.
He looked in his dinner basket and found an enamel cup. He filled it with tea and held it up to her.
"Go on, madam. Try it. Try it. It won't hurt you."
"Well," she said, and she reached down for the cup. She took it and touched her thin, bony lips to it.
"Well, it's certainly some sort of tea."
"Just ordinary tea, madam. Made this morning. Well, you ain't drinking it. Take a good drink."
She took a real drink then, washing it round her mouth.
"Refreshing, ain't it?"
"Yes, it's very refreshing."
"Drink it up. Have a drop more. I'll bet you'll walk a tidy step."
"Yes, I'm afraid I have. All the way from Bedford. Rather farther than I thought. I'm not so young as I used to be."
"Bah! Young! You look 20.
He took his coat and spread it on the new earth above the grave.
"Sit down and rest yourself, madam. Sit down and look at the cowslips."
Rather to his surprise, she sat down. She took another drink of the tea and said, "I think I'll unpin my hat." She took off her hat and held it in her lap.
"Young? Madam, you're just a chicken. Wait till you're as old as I am. Then you can begin to talk. I can remember the Crimea."
"Indeed. You must have had a full and varied life."
"Yes, madam."
She smiled thinly for the first time.
"Oh, I am sorry I spoke as I did. It upset me to think of anyone drinking in this place."
"That's all right, madam, that's all right. I ain't touched a drop for years. Used to, madam, been a regular sinner."
Old Silas reached up to her with the bottle and said,
"Have some more, madam."
And she held down the cup and he filled it up again.
"Thank you," she said. She looked quite pleasant now, softened by the tea and the smell of cowslips and the sun on her bare head.
The bloomer leg had disappeared, and somehow she'd stopped looking like a female and become a woman.
"But you've reformed now," she said.
"Yes, madam,"
Silas said with a slight shake of his head, as though he were a man in genuine sorrow.
"Yes, madam, I'm reformed."
"Was it a long fight?"
"A long fight, madam? Oh, I should say it were, madam, a devil of a long fight."
He raised his Panama hat a little.
Beg pardon, madam, that's another thing I'm fighting against, the language."
"And the drink," she said. "How far back does that go?"
"Well, madam," Silas said, settling back in the grave, where he'd been sitting all the time, "I were born in the hungry 40s. Bad times, madam, very bad times. We was fed on barley pap, madam, if you've ever heard talk of barley pap. And the water were bad too, madam. Oh, very bad. Outbreaks of smallpox and typhoid and all that. So we had beer, madam. Everybody had beer, the babies had beer. So you see, madam, I've been fighting against it for 80 years or more. Oh, me puff."
"And now you've conquered it."
"Yes, madam,"
said my Uncle Silas, who had drunk more in 80 years than would keep a water mill turning.
"I'm conquered it."
He held up the beer bottle.
"Nothing but cold tea. You'll have some more cold tea, madam, won't you?"
"It's very kind of you," she said.
So Silas poured out another cup of the cold tea, and she sat on the graveside and sipped it in the sunshine, becoming all the time more and more human.
"And no wonder," as Silas would say to me afterwards, "seeing as it was still the winter ration we were drinking. You see, I had a summer ration with only a nip of whiskey in it, and then I had a winter ration with pretty near a mugful in it. The weather had been cold up to that day, and I hadn't bothered to knock the winter ration off."
They sat there for another half an hour, drinking the cold tea. And during that time, there was nothing she did not hear about my Uncle Silas's life. Not only how he'd reformed on the beer and was trying to reform on the language, but how he had long since reformed on the ladies and the horses and the doubtful stories, and the lying, and everything else that a man can reform on. Indeed, as he finally climbed up out of the grave to shake hands with her and say good afternoon, she must have got the impression that he was a kind of ascetic lay brother. Except that her face was very flushed, she walked away with much the same dignity as she had come. There was only one thing that spoiled it. The amazing bloomer leg had come down again, and Silas could not resist it.
"Excuse me, madam," he called after her, "but you're liable to lose your knickerbockers."
She turned and gave a dignified smile and then a quick, saucy kind of hitch to her skirt, and the bloomer leg went up, as Silas himself said, as sharp as a blind in a shop window. That was the last he ever saw of her. But that afternoon, on the 2:45 up train out of Saulbrook, there was a woman with a large umbrella in one hand and a bunch of cowslips in the other. In the warm, crowded carriage, there was a smell of something stronger than cold tea, and it was clear to everyone that one of her garments was not in its proper place. She appeared to be a little excited, and to everyone's embarrassment, she talked a great deal. Her subject was someone she had met that afternoon. "A good man," she told them. "A good man."